All right, folks, sit back, relax, get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. The Geocaching Podcast is coming at you right about now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 531, recorded live on May 2nd, 2018. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat With.
Taz 427 and
Info Pirate.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our PayPal or Patreon logos on our webpage to help us keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. So, yeah, we took a week off last week. We had some life issues coming up. And just you got to do what you got to do. That's just how it is. But we're back this week, and we are so glad you are here to join with us. We've got Mr. Chad and Miss Sarah. Scott has sent us one little message in here, and I'll put this in. It said, "May FTF in the books last night." Wow, that's not bad. Just the first day of May. Let's see, 112 months in a row. Way to go, Scott. Baseball season in full swing. Ha ha, no pun intended. Right. So that gives you an idea of what's going on, Mr. Burks and family, what they've been going on. And, yeah, excellent stuff. The weather has definitely started to change. I talked to somebody yesterday when I was playing Sea of Thieves, and he was from Australia. And we're telling us how bitterly cold it feels for them right now. So, yep. So is that how it is for you right now, Sarah?
Yeah, we've had the storm come through over the weekend, and it dumped a lot of rain. Bits of Rotorua got flooded. But it's cold. The winter jumpers are out. The woolies are out. Hey, look after the summer. We want it back in a couple of months, please.
Oh, no, we're going to take our turn. Thank you very much. And and it's one of those things because we're in that nice little – it's been in the low 80s the past 3 or 4 days now. So it's actually built to that point. And you know what's going to happen because the wind stopped in North Carolina. And that only means one thing. The furnace summer is about to turn on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been kind of floating between the 80s and the 70s, and are about ready to go back up in the 80s here. So,
oh yeah,
but it's been nice. You know, 80s here is really nice. So, yeah, managed to get out and get my Earth Day Cedo in a few multis while I was out there, a couple of puzzles, and finally a third time it's a charm. Actually the first time I went to the location and it was right after my knee surgery and I'm looking up in the tree and it's like, my tool's not going to grab that. I've got to climb the tree.
Yeah.
So that was actually during the, I'm blanking out here. Earth Cache. It was a Earth Cache day of 2016. And then Earth Cache day of 2017, I went back out there and I'm looking up in the tree and I can't find the thing. It's like I took notes as to exactly where it was.
Right.
The cache owner finally got around to replacing it. Thank you very much. So while I was out there at the CETO event, which is really close to where this was, I was like, I'm going to take a stop by And I managed to climb the tree and sign a fresh logbook.
All right. Excellent. Wow.
So, you know, it was, some of those are, it's like you only get to the location every once in a great while. Right. And every time you go, you're looking.
It's like
I had one like that in Wanganui, which I've had at least two looks for before and not managed. And finally, a couple of us got it just before December. You know, in December, but it was still evil.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, one of my multis was pretty evil. And it's like, trust me, the coordinates are correct.
Yep.
Well, the coordinates are correct, except for it's about 30 feet below the surface. And you don't realize it where you're at
until you fall in the hole, or
you've got to actually make it down to the riverbank, cross over the rocks on the riverbank, and find a tunnel from the riverbank inland.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun. No.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I had last couple of weeks. I had did two CETOs. Last weekend there was, and while I was there, picked up three letterboxes in a day for a UK challenge to work. So I'm so near qualified, but I just need one more T4.5, 4.5, and I've done it.
Huh.
And a couple of other odds and sods here and there. There was going to be another CETO last weekend, but the rain that came through, they deferred it to this weekend. So I'm gonna head to that, which is good because it's on an island in a lake, so it's a T5 CETO.
Mm.
And we've got another, a bunch here.
There's
like
another
that.
Case on a nearby island, so the organizer has offered to ferry people who need it across to the other island in their boat, little boat.
Oh, very nice.
That's nice.
Yeah, we'll earn our keep, but yeah. And the only thing we're trying to. Couple of people are trying to work out is there's a nearby cache, which is a sort of blight on a lot of people's unfound maps, because it's up in a tree and the council has trimmed the lower branches.
Oh, no way to get up.
And I haven't got one of those telescopic ladders you lot can get off Amazon. It's, can I fit a big folding ladder in my car, because I haven't got a roof rack.
You gotta grab, bear hug that tree and
that's right.
Up.
Show it some love all the way up. And,
I think I'm going to ask somebody who's thinner and taller than me to get, which isn't difficult, to get up. To if I put the ladder for them, will they shimmy up that tree?
See, yeah. That's what we why we used to bring kids when, you know, for me it's like, no, okay, Amanda, it's only 110 feet up. Go, I'll catch you. Don't worry.
Well, put it this way, a mate of mine who, if we don't, had been talking about having an event where everybody chips in with a kohar and we hire a cherry picker for an hour. You know, just lift us up and lift us down again.
There you go.
Because yeah. If we each chip in, you know, and there's enough people who are so frustrated by that one, they'd each chip in $5 or $10 and pretty soon we'd have an hour's worth of hire for one of those things.
I'd do that in a heartbeat. Because cool. Yeah. I'm sorry, my age and my size and the rest of it, my ladder climbing days are long gone.
Yeah. Well, put it this way. A couple of weeks ago, the cat somehow got herself on the roof. And it's not that high. It's only a single story most of that place. But she was wandering around the roof, wowling pathetically, come on, get me down. And I sort of taken a view. Stupid enough to get up there.
Yep.
You can figure your own way down, because otherwise you'll expect, you know, if you're really, you know, if you're still stuck this evening, I'll put a ladder up and come and get you, but you could figure it out for yourself.
Right.
She did after about 15 minutes. But the biggest thing is I finally got my act together, finished off my share of the race locations for the event in October. So I've got the locations, I've got the questions. They're all sorted, some funny little tucked away places, and it's just over to the other two members of the team to, we're each going to take one of the other sections and say, based on the coordinates and the question, can we find the answer?
Okay.
Just to make sure that when they do go up, they're actually accurate and we've not misinterpreted something and written down a 5 when we should have written down a 4 or anything.
It's always good to beta test stuff like that. No, not once.
That's why I've got to the stage of taking photographs of absolutely everything, because if it goes wrong, if it can go wrong, it will.
The only thing worse than that is putting it out and then not putting the actual cache out, but having the thing go live. That's always fun. People love that.
Yeah, newbie cache. I've done some FTF runs on newbie cachers where that's happened.
Oh yeah,
on multiple occasions. It's like, it's got a checkbox there to, you know, yeah, have you put the cache out?
Yes.
And it's like you get the sort of, because I prowl a few of the newbie Facebook groups, chip in very occasionally. I just like to see what people are asking about.
Right.
And I've learned a fair bit that way. But it's the number of variations on the, I want to hide one, I found 3, and how do I write, you know, do I put my cache? When do I put the box out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like Chad said, though, that's my luck, too, going out there and, oh, I'll put it out later today. It's like, okay. Because I'm out there at 5 in the morning after the 2 minutes after the alert goes off.
It's one I didn't go for because I got alerted to it beforehand, and it's now archived. Somebody put the cache out, and they put it out, they published it, and they'd done a serious typo in the coordinates.
Ooh.
And it was about 3 miles out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found some of those based upon the description, and it's like, hang on, yeah, this isn't where it's at, and you know, start moving numbers around, and you actually find, hey, this looks like it where it might actually be.
Yeah.
And go look for it, and sure enough, there it is. It's like, well, FTF caches 3 miles off.
I found one that was about 370 meters away.
Yeah, yeah.
But, hey, I cache with a smartphone, so I know that. And I think what he'd done is he'd got 2 possible locations, and he'd hidden at one and inadvertently put the coordinates in for the other one.
Yep.
So that happens, but, I've seen the digits transposed. Tends to be a common.
It's got to be blatant for me. If it's one of those where I'm in the middle of the woods and they're off, then they're going to be off. I'll do my circle spiral techniques for about 100 feet all the way around, and if I can't find it in that 100 feet, unless it's like there's nothing here except that tree that's a half a mile that way, then I'll go and check something like that out.
Well, we got a group of us together, I think about 7 or 8 of us together on this FTF hunt on a cache that had been out for 12 days in a park in the middle of Houston. Okay, this thing should have been found by now.
Yeah,
if it was out there. So we wound up. It wound up being somewhere in a neighborhood of 500 feet off, and it wasn't a transposed digit or anything like that. It was Girl Scouts' first cache to be put out.
Yep.
They captured it apparently with an iPhone, and it was just like first, as soon as I saw the coordinates, that was the first coordinates that they used, and it was just horrible coordinates. Yeah.
It's in the middle of a lake. I don't think that's it.
Amazing race thing that I'm doing. I used my phone and I was dashing around. The last few I did, I knew where I wanted to be. I just needed to find the right information. And I just used my phone to grab what the coordinates were, but I've been back into Google Maps and tweaked them until they look right on that.
Yeah.
And then it's over to the others that haven't used GPSs to make sure if they're not spot on, at least they're at the spot where you can see the signboard or the inscription or whatever that I'm asking them to get information from.
Yeah. I mean, how long ago was it that, like you said, iPhones were like the dreaded, oh my God, roll your eyes kind of situation? Or just
they
telling
still
people,
are,
they still are, yeah. Household. But I mean, to the degree of where everybody had GPS units. where most people had GPS units, and actually teaching them how to let the GPS settle.
Right.
So that that you would get a more accurate reading. So yeah, it's amazing how things just haven't changed in 18 years. Yep, interesting stuff. Well, good things. Hey, folks, also please, please, please consider becoming a patron of the Geocaching Podcast. We'd greatly appreciate it. Simply head on over to geocachingpodcast.com, and we have a PayPal and a Patreon logo. If you could click on that, and if you could spare a couple of bucks a month, I know for some folks, if you can't afford it, don't do it. But if you can, we sure would appreciate it. And also, please just spread the word about Geocaching Podcast to other geocachers to come in and give our show a listen. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And for all the people that do support us, we thank you. Excellent stuff. All right, moving on to, and I'm going to let let Chad do this one, because I think Cyril's going to end up doing the news this time. So, Sarah, okay. I'm going to get you right here with this.
I got mail! Yay! I got mail! Yay!
We've got sound bites.
Yay.
So, let's see. Sorry, I need to look at the bottom to see who it's from.
Ah.
This is from Gary Neal, Gary T. Neal at Annapolis, Maryland.
Very nice.
So I'm new at geocaching. Well, not really that new. He's been a member since 2008. His first find was in 2011.
All right.
And he admits that he knows nothing about a lot of things. So he has 17 finds, 0 hides, and 2 travel bug logs. So he hasn't been the most active of geocachers, but, you know, welcome to the
quality.
Show.
Yeah.
Quality, not quantity.
That's right.
Exactly. So, but he looked up one of his local reviewer profiles on geocaching.com. He's not going to share the handle with him or her. But for comparison purposes with his profile, the reviewer's profile, he's been around since September 3rd, 2013, has 0 finds and 0 hides and 0 travel bugs log. So even less activity than him. So this question is, shouldn't reviewers have played the game in order to be reviewers? He admits that he's new and not qualified to be a reviewer. But he feels that reviewers should have knowledge of the guidelines and should that be the only qualification that they be knowledgeable of the guidelines. So he's sure that there are many qualified reviewers who have thousands of hides and finds out there, and he wanted our thoughts on it. So, well, you know, I personally 100% agree that a reviewer should be a cacher. Or have been a cacher to become a reviewer. One of the things that you may not know is that most of the reviewers out there have a separate caching account than the reviewer caching account. I know a former local reviewer here in California who I believe has around 4 finds under their reviewer name and has over 30,000 finds under their caching account. So I also know another reviewer who was in Texas. He was Texas's only reviewer for years and has no hides or finds under his reviewer account, but he's a active cacher.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot out there. And I've known, 3 or 4, almost 5 actually, different reviewers, because they rotate after a while. That is a thankless job. Let me put this out right off the bat. Being a reviewer, they do it on a volunteer basis. It is a thankless job, because think of being put in the worst customer complaint department and not get paid for it, because that's pretty much what you're in.
And until recently, it's been mostly kind of a secret society.
Yeah.
So we didn't know who the reviewers were.
Right.
And that's why they had a caching account and a reviewer account.
Right.
I was going to liken it to a system. If you're an IT person, you usually have your user account and you have your admin account.
Yes. With
different rights and accesses and privileges.
Yep.
So whenever I'm doing anything, I've got to think now, am I being me? Or am I being admin me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you get the difference. So I have to do a lot of that.
Yep.
And the other thing is that you can't go, ooh, I want to be a reviewer. Pick me, please. They're usually shoulder tapped by other reviewers who know that they know what they're on about.
Right.
And they have their own caches so that they, you know, they obviously can't review and publish their own, but they play the game. They know the game.
Yeah.
So they then said, you're somebody we trust to police the game.
Yes.
Or referee it. Take your pick.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kudos. I mean, our reviewer, the dealings I've had with him, he's way, way up in the top end of the North Island. So far end of the state, think of it. He's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the ones that I have personally known were reviewers. And like Chad said, it's kind of like a wink, wink, nod, nod, how's it going kind of thing. They've been in the game since almost the beginning. Tens of thousands of finds a piece, that kind of thing. So, yeah, they're like you said, Secret Society, they kind of keep out of the spotlight unless one of us brings them on a podcast or something like that so that people can throw vegetables and other items at them. But other than that, they're great folk. You may have some people out there, and I kind of bit my tongue when they said it, that think they've never played the game when they come get their review response of their geocache hide. But it's mm-hmm. not true. They all have experience, and they got rules and regulations they have to follow by. And if it doesn't go with what you want, guess what?
and you gotta live with their interpretations of the rules
as
well.
Yes.
So and different reviewers will interpret things a little bit different. And you know, if you're one of my pieces of advice to people who go out to a lot of events and stuff, is to be kind with your comments regarding to reviewers, because you never know what cacher around you might actually be your local reviewer
or somebody that knows somebody who is there for
reviewers that I actually know in person now. I have met at events before I ever found out later in life that they were reviewers.
Yeah.
I was going to say that we sort of joke that New Zealand's a global village, and any sub-community is even more so. It's a case of you can't make any comment about anybody, because either they'll find, you know, either they'll find out about something or they'll know somebody. Do you know what she said about? And so that's why I'm really, really cautious about what I say about people.
And it's not like they're out there with they're not out there with an agenda like, oh, yeah, and go that way, but they're human beings that have to put up with a lot of crap when it comes to reviewing these things. And let's face it, if you get a comment back from a reviewer, it's probably because you didn't do something that's going to follow underneath the rules, and they're doing their job telling you what it is so that you can make it right. And that, you know, you start butting heads and all the rest of it, that is no fun. That is no fun on either side, but that's how the game works. And thank God we've got reviewers, because think of the mess we would have if it didn't.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. So, thank you so much for sending that in. That was awesome, Gary, Neil, and we greatly do appreciate it. Let's see. Let's move on to the news.
Hi, I got a couple of things here. One is apparently today, might be tomorrow or yesterday in your time zone.
But continuums.
Yeah, but today is Big Blue Switch Day, apparently. Geocaching is 18 years old, so it can vote and buy alcohol here.
Not here.
Ooh, what can it do where you are?
Basically, drive and vote, and then ask their bigger brother to get the other stuff for them. You didn't hear it from here.
Move out of the house.
Move out of the house. There you go.
Ooh, I keep dropping hints to my 22-year-old, but he's not buying it. But hey, if he wasn't living with us, we'd probably be paying a good chunk of his rent, and I'd sooner that went on reducing our overdraft rather than somebody else's.
There you go. Yeah. Well, either that or it would be rummaging your cupboard for food and using your laundry mat, washer, dryer.
Does that.
So absolutely.
Yeah. So on a sort of more serious note, there's, and this is probably of interest to anybody planning a trip to New Zealand in the next year or so. And I know I briefly mentioned this in the podcast before, but there's a something called, there is a type of tree called kauri, which I suppose is a huge phenomenal tree. They used to be used to make big, tall, straight trees. They used to make a lot of masts for sailing ships. They were that tall, that tall and that strong. But there's a disease called kauri dieback disease. And to prevent that spreading, a large section of the area north of Auckland is now officially closed and the tracks are blocked off to prevent unauthorized access. You know, at the moment, there's no cure for this, so they just want to contain it, prevent it spreading. If you look on that map of the Waitakere Ranges in Auckland, a lot of the acacias are disabled. The reviewers have been helping in that as well. And a lot, and several people have marked their acacia names as **, track closed, **, and archived them. So that just to try and stop people thinking, hey, I'll go and get this one. It's so many days lonely. I must go and find it. Mm-hmm. So some acacia owners have even arranged for somebody who has authorization to enter that area to visit and physically remove their acacias so that they're not, so that if being archived and it being renamed and legal bans aren't enough to keep people out, the fact that there isn't a case there anymore to actually find should help on that. So if you're trip planning, just be aware of that. There's plenty of other boxes all over the place to find, but please respect that one. And I've given you a link in the show notes to a bit more meaningful information.
Yeah. There has been, over the years, several different types of diseases that have literally devastated states with this. There was one, a particular, I can't remember the specifics. It was like a particular worm larva that wiped out killed all the softwoods for literally whole states. Birch in certain states that was just everywhere is now gone. A lot of other softwoods that were out there have been completely devastated. I find it interesting that they think closing the tracks, if there was that much human interaction, that it's going to make an effect for something like that.
I don't know if it will, but it's a fungal thing, so it can be spread on people's boots or whatever. So gotcha. That's why. I mean, the only thing I can think of similar in the UK was sort of around my childhood was something called Dutch elm disease.
Oh, yeah.
Which was spread by beetles.
Right.
And that virtually wiped out elm trees in it. So it's actually, I mean, there's quite a lot of elms in New Zealand, but they aren't in that many in the UK. So
yeah, there was a beetle infestation going through the Midwest and stuff, and a lot of the public parks and stuff that would have fire pits and stuff would not allow you to bring your own wood in because they were afraid of bringing the infestations into the park.
Yeah, and it's massive when it hits. It's really scary about how much that can wipe out.
I mean, I was gonna say that sort of wherever you are, if there's some sort of rahui or ban or restriction, respect them. And if your power trail goes through there, perhaps leave that bit for another month.
Yeah, that's something that really is. I mean, like you said, respect it and go with that because, well, you can't be that small minded or closed minded to think, well, my little thing's not going to affect anything.
Well, there's one that's, and I actually went to it a couple of probably about 8-9 years ago now. North of Auckland, there's a big tourist attraction, a huge one of the oldest kauri trees called Tanemahuta, which the Maori translation of that is God of the Forest.
Yeah.
So, and that you walked along a boardwalk to it and a walkway around. So, you know, sort of imagine all your giant redwoods suddenly.
Oh, yeah, that would be, absolutely devastating. Mm. Absolutely
or
devastating.
Pick your state tree of choice.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So that's definitely something to keep aware with, and hopefully they'll find something that'll take care of that because it's just terrible. Yeah. I mean, I've gone in parts of Michigan where you could tell where the kind of the boundaries are of certain, I don't want to say geological, but just the type of trees that, grow in certain areas.
Yeah.
And there used to be birch everywhere going all the way up. And then now there's nothing. And so it's saddening. It really is to see in a lifetime that kind of stuff happen. So, yeah, definitely keep track on that. All right, good stuff. Let's move on to episode 531. This one called Geocaching App News and Other Stuff. We'll have the link to the blog posting on geocaching.com. That's called New Cache Details in the Geocaching App. Now, did you guys ever get a chance to go take a look at it? Since it's started,
I've read it, but I've not been back and played with the app, to be honest.
Yeah, I looked at it a little bit, and quite frankly, there was a lot of mixed reviews on this one that they had. Now, again, we're not bashing because they're trying to do stuff and they're trying to improve, and we are glad that geocaching.com is at least keeping that effort going. I think the way that it came across, and I'll read this. It seems to be they tried to palm it off as being a bigger thing than it actually was. And a lot of people are reacting off of that. But so let me read this part to you. It says, the days are getting longer and the sun is a little brighter in the northern hemisphere. Sorry, Sarah. Spring is in the air. We've been working hard this winter on fresh new look for spring and are excited to show it off. And he says, here's what's new and improved. There's only a few bullet points, but they get their point across. One is a snazzy new look for cache details. We simplified the design and eliminated a lot of the scrolling to make it easier to access the information. Buttons to message a cache owner and view the hint have been moved up to the front and center. The cache description is now in the new menu, and now you're only one tap away from getting all the details. With a quick glance, you can now easily see the latest activity on the geocaches. Excited to have a look. We're sharing before and after screenshots below. Better yet, see for yourself in the geocaching app. So I'm going to actually bring up on mine here. They did. They eliminated a lot of the up and down. You had a lot of information that you had to really thumb through when it came to the app and where it is now. And quite frankly, I think what the reason why people are kind of a little off on it, they did simplify things, but because it's simple and it's easier to get to a particular cache set of information that's on it, it's like, yeah, great. I don't see the sparklers going off and the cannons roaring and people going ooh ah, because
I'm
maybe
just looking at it.
Yeah,
do they make it look a bit more like CGO?
Yeah, actually, that's a lot.
But white, not black.
Right. Yeah, I mean when you look at it, you've got the log geocache button right there. It gives finally the difficulty, terrain, and size information right there. The thing that I may understand why they did it, but they give the information that's placed by. Before, they used to have that at the bottom of the screen, but they had the logo of the cacher or cachers that put it in there, and to me that gave much more of a personal look, you know, for the person that actually placed the cache. May not be a huge thing, but to me that gave just a little bit more spotlight on the cache owner. And even if it's something that you're just grazing over subliminally, it just seemed a little more flair for that. Now they just put the name and the date. So I thought that was a little bit too minimalized. I mean, the put the graphic icon there wouldn't have hurt that much of a market space as far as on the app.
I haven't played with it, so I can't really comment. But
yeah.
For me, when I'm opening a cache, it's the right, I'm here, what sort of a thing am I looking for, and what additional information is so that I need to be aware, need to start looking at. So getting down to the story about it, or the hints and tips is what's really what's useful to me. Oh, and the compass, so you know which way you're at, way to start looking.
For me, if I know the cache owner, that gives me ideas of how they place geocaches. So that little bit of information, you know, may help some, not others. But I've learned that before, where a particular geocache hider hides it, and it's like, oh, okay, I need to be looking for this, at least in the beginning.
Yeah, oh, it's a such and such hide. They always put them one of three places.
Yeah.
Can I see dot, 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 dot?
Yeah, so it's almost an informational thing for me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I do like that they simplified it in general. I would like to actually see the attribute icons already displayed there. You know, you don't necessarily need to use the you know, 7 or 8 lines that they had before to have it. You know, having the first 5 and then a more button on the side, and not even called attributes. I mean,
yeah,
that's something people can tell what an attribute is.
Yeah.
I like that they have the photo link right there.
Yep.
The hint being up top. Right there where you can easily hit it with your thumb.
Same with message.
Message there. You know, I do like that. And yeah, so overall, I've got it almost on one screen, everything. So, I haven't played with this enough to really say that. Well, I'm not switching from CGO yet. So,
fair enough.
But you know, I think it's decent improvements going the right way. But yeah, I'm not jumping up and down for joy.
Yeah, it boils down to how does this work for me? It's getting to the geocache. How well can I hook into my street by street navigation when I get to the point where I start going? How well does the compass interact with what I need so that I can point to the geocache instead of trying to figure out, am I getting closer to it or further away? All the ways of actually getting to the geocache to me are extremely important. It's still up at the top where you can get all that. I do love the way that where they have the trackable information is minimized down to where you can quickly just click on it and log it. It's under headers so that you actually have, you know, if you want to look at the description, you want to see the activity, because that's a huge thing too, being able to go through and quickly see what other people have done when it comes to actually finding the geocache itself, because there's little bits of information that you can glean off of that.
Yeah, I'm not really a trackable person. I'm kicking myself because I forgot to bring it down to this meeting room I'm using. But at the weekend, I finally met one. I encountered a Magic the Gathering trackable.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you actually saw one?
It's still sitting in my bag upstairs.
Ah, very nice.
I'll bring it to the... If I get to the CETO at the weekend, I will wave it around for anybody who wants to discover and then let it go at that point.
Very nice.
Was that the offering that they had recently?
Yeah, they had, 1,000 or 2,000 that they gave out.
And I didn't get one.
I did not either.
I didn't get one either. Yeah. And, you know, I was there, like, early on day one.
And I showed it to my kids, and they went, oh, it's one of those. Right. Oh, it's her. She's not very nice. And then proceeded to give me the entire backstory of this MTG character. Look, you think I'm obsessed. They're Magic the Gathering junkies.
Wow. Hey, you know, everybody's got their own thing.
It's the oldest one seriously considering becoming a tournament judge because he's got that sort of level of knowledge now.
Oh, boy. See, I used to do that with Dungeons & Dragons years and years ago.
Yeah, so did I. Oddly enough, I used to specialize in playing elves with severe attitude problems.
Yeah, me too. The funny part was, is all I can still remember is hearing my mother go, if you spent a portion of the time that you study on this thing on schoolwork, you would be a genius. And yeah,
I have said exactly the same thing to it about to the lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a parent too.
And I'm sure my mother said it to me about all sorts of other things.
Oh, sure. All part of the fun.
So, yeah, I found one. I finally found one.
That's great.
So, yeah, that was good. And other thing I found is, I don't know if any of you have actually used the website rather than any app-based approach recently, but I logged on last week to try and, because I prefer to actually log through the website rather than through the phone. I just type slightly less inaccurately, use it on a keyboard rather than the phone. And predictive text in logging is not good. Not for me. Anyway, so, but they gave it, I had a little survey pop up asking about how I, you know, how did I use the map, what worked for me, what didn't, what apps I used. And CGO got a mention.
Really?
Yeah. So they actually admitted the dark side exists.
Wow. I'm impressed. I would have liked to have seen a screenshot of that one.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking about it. I should have done. But no, it was some interesting things. What works for me, what didn't. And good on you for Groundspeak for trying to find out how different people use your services in different ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't do change if you don't do your research.
Well, you can, but you can't guarantee any decent change.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
You know, I was a few months ago, Groundspeak changed or added with regards to mystery caches the field to populate to auto check the final coordinates in there, as opposed to having to go out to a geochecker to do it. Mm. And I have to say that with having solved over 300 puzzles for Cincinnati and probably a good 50, 60 of them having that new feature in there, I have to applaud them for it because there's some geocheckers out there that just plain suck.
Okay.
That's good with regards to entering the data. But this is, it's great for entering the data. It automatically updates your final coordinates in your cache. And I love that the mapping automatically puts the cache until you've found it at the coordinates. So when you're roaming around with the app, you know if there's a solved one close by.
Wow, that's excellent.
I have to applaud that. You know, it was like I thought it was going to be a nice feature, but I really think that's a great feature.
Excellent.
It's really useful if you're going along a road and thinking, ooh, there's a gap here. Where I know there's something where it. Oh, it's that one. Oh, I have solved it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because nothing worse than going, you know, I'm out in the middle of a field and realize that that last digit or that middle digit or whatever is incorrect, to be actually know that the information that you have is the right information when you go to find that final, it's huge. Because I've had it several times where it's like, this is incorrect.
Or worse, when I'm using the website to plan a route, and you go along, you plan the route, especially if it's a fair bit out of town. So you've used a tank of petrol to get there and back, and you get back home and you realize there were three solved puzzles you've got on that were there, and you just drove straight past them because you'd only seen them at the original coordinates rather than the revised ones. So, yeah, I think that's a really, really good thing that they brought in.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right, so things are moving on and for the better, hopefully, with that. And, you know, everybody's going to have their yay or nay about stuff. Just hopefully for the people that wanted a little more easier, minimalistic, but useful way of using the app, hopefully this is the right direction for doing things. Okay, let's move on to, we have, I went out and I love just kind of going through the forums and just finding random stuff. And the one that I've got for the host this week, came out of the forums sometime about mid-April or so. And it was interesting, kind of raised an eyebrow right off the bat. The title of it is How Do I Create an Interesting Micro Container? And I'll just pull this right out for what was stated. It says, I own a geocache in an urban area in a very small park. Recently, it disappeared from its location, and I temporarily disabled the listing. The park had several trees perfect for hiding geocaches in, but I was looking for any suggestions for a micro container that is not the ordinary bison tube attached to a bush, something that geocachers will remember, unlike the many LPCs that are near my geocache. Any ideas would be accepted. Thoughts? So I'm going to let the host kind of jump on this one of their thoughts about micros. The nice thoughts.
Get a 3D printer.
There you go.
There's plenty of 3D printed ideas that are out there on websites like Thingiverse, and you can make your own designs and stuff. Here's a design of one of mine that looks like a mud dauber's nest.
Ooh.
And has magnets on the back and a bison tube in the end.
Yeah.
And you stick this up underneath a utility box or something, mm-hmm. and people are looking underneath there. It's like, I don't want to touch that.
That is a big dauber.
Yeah,
that is a big dauber.
It's a big mud dauber. It's a Texas-sized mud dauber.
What the hell's a mud dauber?
It's a wasp.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So it's called a mud dauber because it makes its nest out of mud.
Right.
And it looks like a little pile of mud stuck to the side of your house or in a corner.
Yeah, because I ended up using, and still in my YouTube for geosnippets, I ended up using Bondo and creating an anthill for that.
Yep.
And people would sit there. The biggest thing that they go is, well, in the area that I live, we have hills, but not quite as big. And I, mm-hmm. I really realized, because I was using 35 millimeters, I think, were the first ones that I would cover with Bondo. And you get it made, and you put on different types of textured paints. And it looks really nice. It's just kind of big. Doing the same thing with a Nano worked out really well for things like that as well, except that a lot of people are like, you know how many fire ants are in that particular area? You got to be careful for stuff like that. So, yeah, you can get a lot of creative things. One of the things – go ahead.
I was going to say, a lot of things what I've seen is people have raided the local charity shops and thrift shops and picked up sort of kids sort of plastic insects and bugs and spiders and what.
Oh, yeah.
They make excellent bison hides.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, there's a whole series on here.
You find your spider in a tree, and it's one of those.
There's a really good series out here that's called Phobias, and it hits all the ones like bugs and spiders and ants and all the other ones that are out there. Same thing. It's all little thrift store stuff.
I'd say the best things are the right case in the right place. And a little tiny magnetic nano the size of, the size of a pill is right for some areas.
Uh-huh.
Not every area.
Nope.
I wouldn't put one in the forest.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw a really good one. Somebody had said a nano in a forest. And you got there. And yes, it was one of those tiny little nanos in a sort of 15-liter bucket. sort of nano in a pine cone or bison in a pine cone. It's fitting the container to the location.
Yeah.
That makes them special.
Yeah, if you can find the wow factor with a nano hide. I know Sonny loves LPCs from Podcasher. And one of the things, though, that always brings a smile to my face is if I open up a skirt hide and somebody took the time to make like a little mini village,
mm-hmm.
or a bunch of Lego stuff with things together, a theme to underneath it, that always brings a smile to my face. for something like that. And then, you know, if whatever they have for the container for the hide is great. But if they put just that little bit of extra effort in there to, you know, either, like you said, have that tarantula waiting or something cute that that kids would like to see or adults even, yeah. that's just a little different. It doesn't take much to do.
The favorite points will come.
Yes, the favorite points will come.
So, the only the caveat I'd stick in there is make sure it's right for the location and the weather that it's likely to encounter.
Yes, very true.
Hiding it in a cute, fluffy little soft toy is going to be great for the first week until it rains and it gets soggy and horrid.
Yes, you got to think about the things that you're placing and how they're going to wear under, you know, the sun. Even if it's underneath a lamppost skirt, it gets hot in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you want little welted wax figures looking back at you, then that's the look you're going for. But otherwise, not so much. Yeah, excellent stuff. So yeah, there's definitely. I love the 3D printing. You can get into so many little things or themes. I would love to see a little TARDIS sitting in there, you know, just as a theme for something like that, a little Doctor Who or whatever character, Lego or what have you.
I think I've seen one of those. I can't remember where it was, but yes, I have.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. And and the one that drove people the craziest was the park that had one tree that was mostly dying. And it was definitely on the way out, and it was a simple black nanotube hooked onto a nail that was there. That it just people would walk around. They're looking down. They can, you know. And I actually went to lean on it and touched it, and at first it's like yipe, and I looked, and there it was, nano on a nail. So I mean, you can get some crazy stuff that'll people will appreciate.
Go ahead.
I saw one that was a nano, that was a bison tube with a bit of bark glued to it.
Uh-huh.
And they just wedged that into a fork in the tree, and it looked like the fork wasn't there. That took a lot of spotting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I found one like that that basically was had a knot in the tree, and but they took another limb and cut it down and put the nano inside the limb and shoved that down in the knot, and it fit just perfectly, and it looked natural.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know, so I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. The one that Amy was so proud when we went first time geocaching, she was getting into it quite heavily with that, and we were down by one of the colleges in the southern part of the state. And the more southern you get down there, you get the Spanish moss that's hanging from the trees. And so I couldn't find it. I'm looking, and all of a sudden she's giggling and laughing because somebody had taken, like, the same thing, a knot, and put a small magnet into the knot and then had a container that was covered in Spanish moss that would hook onto the magnet. And so there's, unless you are up there and knew that was there, and she walked right up to it. I was like on tree number 5 by the time it's over there. She's like, hey, you looking for this? So yeah, you can get some really creative with geocaching and micros.
Yeah, I had one. So I had a little mini tour in my neighborhood called Great Wood on Tour. And this one called Great Wood on Tour, Manor's Own Swing Set. If you look at Manor's Own Swing Set, that's moss.
Oh, yes.
So it was hidden in the Spanish moss hanging from the tree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can be creative.
I saw one that I've got to be careful because I don't want to give too much away, but most of in the Wellington area, that was a falling down fence, and the cage was hidden in a post that had come off and been put back on with magnets.
Ah, very nice.
I'm not going to give any more away because it would be a total and utter spoiler at that point.
All right. But yeah, you know, the creativity and the amount that you want to put into a geocache is totally up to you. But if you want the favorite points, just that little extra cool factor is all it takes. Doesn't take much for it to make it neat. So, yeah.
Just be a little careful when you where you hide it, because you can come up with a really cool container, but if it's somewhere where the local kids find it and after
that, you gotta,
you might start losing the fun.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things you have to really realize is how exposed, either while the geocacher is actually trying to find the geocache, after the geocacher finds it, and when the geocacher puts it back, and how easy to put it back correctly makes a big difference. Because if you make it complicated and you get somebody that doesn't care and they just kind of willy-nilly put things in, everything can go to pot.
I've had to do that on occasion. If I when I grow up, I want to be 5 foot two.
I want to be 6 foot two. Yes.
Well, I am officially 5 foot one and 5/8, and it got to the eighths of an inch on a Christmas argument between me, my mother, and my aunt, and who was wearing the thicker socks. It's that important.
That's
so
funny.
You can appreciate that there are times that somebody who's 6 foot and a bit just goes, "Oh, it's up there."
Uh-huh.
For me, it's, you've got to be joking. And there was one recently, within the last year, that I managed to get it down, but there was no way I could get it back up there.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you don't realize till it's in your hand and you've signed it and you're trying to get it back there. And of course, this was a Muggle central area.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, shit, what do I do? And I was
just thinking, we're going to get through this whole thing without ringing that bell.
Sorry.
That's all right.
But I ended up putting it back, but at the bottom of the feature rather than the top, because at least that way, if somebody came around the next day and looked for it, the coordinates were still correct.
Right.
But I got a lot of grief for that. Well, I got a grief from a couple of people for, why didn't you put it back as intended? Because I couldn't.
Yeah.
Would you prefer me to walk off with it? Would you prefer me not to tell you where I'd left it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to make mine relatively height friendly, I do have one friend, Red Car, who is like 4 foot nothing, so it's like for her, it's like she's just used to it, so she doesn't complain. But I had a series out that along a walking trail, and the landscaping folks came by and cut out all the shorter limbs one day, and I had to move them all up, and it was like, okay, that's fine, I can reach it. Right after that, it was like I got complaint after complaint after complaint about it being too high. It's like, there aren't any shorter limbs on the tree left.
Yes. Wow. Yep, that happens. That happens. Mm-hmm. All right.
I know you only did it deliberately to spite.
Oh, absolutely. He is the king of FU hides.
I got a couple that are FU hides.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. There's nothing about being evil. There's nothing wrong with it one bit.
One of the tree where where the council has trimmed all the branches below, but I was telling you about at the start, where we're going to have to get a ladder or a cherry picker comes under that category now.
No doubt. We'll make an attribute that's a cherry picker. I love it. That'd be awesome.
Specialist equipment required.
That's right. Automatic difficulty 5. Good stuff. All right. Well, we want to thank Chad and we want to thank Sarah for today. Excellent discussion, guys. We want to thank you fine folks for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for stopping on by. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing our viewers and visitors, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. The show is copyright 2018 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.